All right, so our second reading comes from the Gospel of Mark, and we're in chapter 8. This is right before the Transfiguration, so we spoke to it a little bit a couple of weeks ago. And I want to back up just a couple verses so we can remember the setting of the passage we have before us. So Jesus says to his apostles, "So who do the people say that I am?" And they answered him, "Well, some say you're John the Baptist, and others say that you're Elijah, and still others say that you're one of the prophets." And he asked them, "But who do you say that I am?" And Peter answered him, "You are the Messiah." And Jesus sternly ordered them not to tell anyone about him. And then he began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and to be killed after 3 days rise again. He said this all quite openly. Now Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his apostles, Jesus rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." And then Jesus called the crowd with his disciples, and he said to them, "If any of you want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what does it profit one to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Those who are ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in his glory, the glory of his Father, and with his holy angels." Let us pray. Spirit of the living God, descend afresh on me. Spirit of the living God, descend afresh on us. Lord God, that your word may not return empty. Amen. I love getting in these times when the worship committee kind of works together and directs where I want to bend or think the sermons, or gives me a place to stand as I come to the passages of the week. And this week it's God's will and our dreams. And so we have before us this day these people who have amazing dreams. And just thinking about as I remember earlier in the week, we were invited to come over and keep an eye on Andrew for a couple hours. While we were there, one of the things that crossed my mind was, you know, he's too little yet to be thinking in terms of the future. And I don't think Andrew's yet holding that conversation with himself about who will I become? You know, not looking at how the world might unfold before him and what it will mean to be his own person in his own place and his own space. But Zach, I'm thinking Zach's probably had that conversation with himself a couple of times about, wow, who will I be when I grow up, whatever exactly that means? I'm thinking that there's a bunch of us in this congregation who have wrestled regularly with wanting to know what it means to be who we are. And I remember in my own life being of an age when I dreamed about my future. And I wondered, who will I be? And sometimes even puzzled that I got to be at all. What a random chance that my father and mother in their creation of children, that I happened to form exactly like I did. You know, like what's the chance of that? And it kind of even gets more bizarre because my father was a remarkably not religious kind of guy, and he and my mom, they'd had three kids. They had the two boys, and they got the girl they always wanted, and And then they were kind of done having kids, or at least so it seemed. And then they were very busy being about being parents and doing their thing. And then my dad, I like to say he got religion. And he was actually talking to one of the priests. And the priest actually asked him about this exact passage. The passage that says, what good does it do one to gain the world if the cost is your soul? And Dad heard that pretty deeply and started taking himself to church. And he went to a Roman Catholic church, and they didn't believe in birth control. And as a result of that, I am. You know, it's like my mother was kind enough to confide in me all kinds of stuff that I probably never should have known. But she wasn't particularly interested in being pregnant. She was tired of having children by the time she had her third one. But she went on, and she gave birth to 9 more kids. And so I like to say my mom had 3 children, and then she had a whole bunch of accidents, and I'm one of those accidents. And you know, I'm grateful for that. But you know, my dad's life did not turn out the way he dreamed it would. You know, he thought he would be. He would be a, you know, shiny young professional. He would have a beautiful, contained family that he would kind of move in accordance to what the prevailing wisdom was in his day, and that he would have his life unfold in a particular way. When he was a 16, 17, 18-year-old guy, and he was looking to what the future might hold, he dreamed dreams of the way he thought his life would go, and probably the way he thought it ought to go. And then kind of God got in the way. And how lovely is that story, really? And, you know, so it's my father's story, and it's my story, and I think about who I thought I was going to be when I was 17, 18, 19 years old. I never, ever envisioned myself as somebody who would be a pastor. Who would be involved in the church, who would hold the kind of life that I've held. I always kind of imagined that I would be a parent, and that I would have children, and I would, you know, and I kind of held dreams for my life, and those dreams are really not about the way my life turned out. So I come to this passage very, very tenderly and gratefully, and with a little bit of fear and trepidation, to be fully honest, that I think we all kind of hold dreams for what our lives are going to be and how they're going to unfold. And what is going to mean to be me? What will it mean to be me? What will it mean to be whoever we are? How does that, what's that going to look like? How will that unfold? And I know that many people come to their lives very anxious and full of fear. You know, so what happens if I get it wrong? What happens if as I'm going down the journey of my life, I take a path that leads me someplace that I really don't want to go? I hold this image of myself as a young person with this goal that I want to get to, and you know, it might have to do with being popular, it might have to do with being wealthy, it might have to do with being respected, it might have, but there are these things that we kind of want in our lives as they begin to take form. And I think of Abraham. You know, now I don't know an awful lot about Abraham and Sarah, you know, just the stories are, I mean, kind of well developed, and in some ways Abraham was just such a buffoon. You know, there's the great story about he takes Sarah, and by this point they're pretty old, goes down into Egypt, and she is such a beauty that he has to lie about who she is, because he's afraid that the Pharaoh will kill him in order to be able to take Sarah, his wife, for the Pharaoh's own wife. And so he has Sarah say that she's his sister. And then it all turns around and et cetera. But you know, it's kind of a scoundrelly thing to do, isn't it? To tell your wife to lie and say she's your sister so that you can keep yourself safe. Well, you know, Abraham did that. And then Abraham, you know, he kind of got an inkling from God that that he needed to go to this new land and that God was going to make him a nation, and he'd done that. And the years kind of keep going by. And he finds himself now an old man. He's 99 years old. Sarah's about 90. They still don't have any children. You know, and all those dreams that he held when of all of the people that wanted to court Sarah, he was the one who was successful. He's the one that she married. And then they just didn't have any children, and they kept trying, and they didn't have any children. You know, and Abraham begins to swallow his dreams. He begins to wonder what it means to be him. He begins to wonder if he misunderstood God, if his life was going to unfold without him ever having a child. And he does some things. He marries one of Sarah's servants, has a child by her, and then God comes forth and makes a promise that Sarah will bear a son, and that this will be the son with whom he will bless himself and he'll bless the world. However, God also says, but I'm also going to bless your son Ishmael, and I'm also going to bless the world through your son Ishmael. And so that happens too. But Abraham, as he goes through the days of his life, begins to lose his dreams. He holds out this thing that he so wants, and then it doesn't seem to be happening that way. And then he hears a message from God. And even at his old age, he's willing to trust in God's ability to do that which is unusual, to do that which is extraordinary. And so Abraham believes in God, and Paul tells us that Abraham believes in God, and it's counted to him as righteousness. And he is of God's elect, and God makes this agreement with him about the way the world will unfold. I think about Jesus as a young guy, 17, 18 years old. All the testosterone in his body and his muscles are doing the guy thing, and they're getting big, and he's got all these dreams about who he's going to be. And what's that going to look like? And he has dreams about his own life, about what it means as he in prayer starts coming clear that he is set apart by God for some very special purpose. And I'm thinking that 17-year-old Jesus is not thinking in terms of a cross. I'm thinking he's probably thinking in terms of all of the wonderful things that he can do with his life. And he dreams, and yet God's will is not exactly in those dreams of young Jesus. But God's will is with a different path, one that's very difficult to get one's head around or one's heart around. I think of Peter. He thought he was going to be a good fisherman. Probably thought he was going to catch so many fish that he could buy his own fleet of boats. And he and his wife, and they were going to have lots of children, and they were going to be leaders in the community and be well respected by all. And he would walk down the streets, and people would say, "Wow, there's Simon. He's a neat guy. We love Simon, and he's got all those people that work for him, and he catches so many fish." And Simon, dreaming of being a good fisherman and a good husband and a good father. And then he encounters Jesus. And his dreams change, and he's with Jesus, and we're kind of in this place. So where we encounter the gospel here today, a few chapters ago, Jesus fed 4,000 people in Judah, in Israel. And then he went across the river into what they call Transjordan area, and he had another huge group of people come to hang out with him, and this time there's 5,000 people, and he feeds them too. First he feeds those who are within God's community, and then he feeds those who are outside of the community as it's understood. And he feeds all these people, and people are coming to Jesus. He's worked miracles. He's healed people. He's done this amazing teaching. He's fed the hungry. He's he's definitely shown himself to be this extraordinary person, this person that the people are talking about. Well, who is this? And he says, who do people say I am? And they say, well, some say you're Elijah. Some say you're a great prophet. He says, but who do you say I am? And Peter says, you are the Messiah. Now, imagine what Peter's thinking at that moment. You are the Messiah. We have heard of your coming since our very infancy. People have read to us our scriptures, and we know about the promise of God's coming Messiah who's going to reestablish the throne of David. And you are that person, and you chose me, Peter, to be amongst those whom you hold dear. You, in fact, I seem to be your best friend. You seem to trust me with your life. You have called me Peter because I am the rock upon which you're going to build your church. You trust me. You love me. This amazing thing is happening. I love the way it's all unfolding. I thought I was going to be a fisherman, and now you're going to make me a fisher of people. And life is good. And I'm going to be famous. And I'm really liking the way this whole thing is unfolding. And Jesus says, yeah, but let me tell you what this means. It means that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering. He's going to be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes. He's going to be killed. And after 3 days, he will rise again. He said it pretty openly. It's not a secret. By now, Jesus had realized that God's will and his dreams as a young person didn't coincide all that well. And God's will and even his dreams and hopes as he comes later to the Garden of Gethsemane don't particularly gel very well. But he also understands that if he is going to be the person that he needs to be, he needs to follow in accordance to God's will and not to his selfish dreams, not to his selfish ambitions. He needs to follow the will of God right into Pilate's dungeon, right into the cross at Calvary. And he understands that that if he is going to live into his purpose, he needs to be God's person taking up the cross and going where God takes him, not being the person that he always thought that he would like to be, not being the miracle worker or the feeder of tens of thousands, that he would be the one who confronted the authorities that tried to dehumanize men and women, children, that he, if he was going to be who he truly was, needed to be faithful, even unto their hatred, even unto their violence, even unto death. And when Peter says, Lord, you can't be doing this. We just figured out who you are. So full of his own dreams. And so way which is easy rather than that way which is God's way. To be or to become, be and who you truly are. Don't get lost in the will. That person who we were at times in our own lives where I think we all know people who got so caught up in their own storyline that they weren't able to find their way back into who it was that God created in lifetimes, desperate to allow God to be God in the heart of their entire world. If we're outside of God's intention for us, it doesn't matter to forfeit one's life and do from before we dreamed for ourselves. Dreams tenderly and offer them to God to see how God can take the seeds of our own dreams. We're giving you thanks. In that secret conversation, the dreams of his own life, not him in gentleness, even as we by you for our own selves.